making sense of the Premier League goal glut this season, two tips for the weekend's action, plus a look at a side in the lower leagues that is playing 7 matches in 13 days. All that and more on today's show. Hello and welcome to the Betting Expert Football Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Jenkins, joined as ever by Betting Expert's football editor, Sam Ingram. How are you doing, Sam?
Hello, Dan. I'm very good. How are you?
Deathly ill, but other than that...
You sound a little off, yeah. I wasn't going to say anything, but...
Yeah, I'm glad you did. Brought up just as the mics are hot. Yeah, good. Things were a little bit different for us last week. We had our South American expert, Nathan Joyce, on the show, discussing everything from the Copa America in the summer to the Libertadores, which has just started. I thought it was a really interesting, insightful interview from him. So do check that out if you haven't already. Nathan spoke about people who are maybe newer to South American football and how they can get involved and start following games on the continent. He said that Libertadores is a really good place to start, and we've taken that advice on the expert insight section of bettingexpert.com. Sam,
yeah, that I'm one of those people as well. Like I mentioned it on last week's podcast, like I'm quite square. I stick to Championship, you know, League One, League Two, a little bit boring in that respect. So betting on South American football is few and far between for me. So I got a lot from it, and yeah, on site we've now got a Copa Libertadores and Copa America outright anti-post preview articles, and also a Brazilian Serie A outright piece as well. And alongside that, Nathan's also going to be delving into the best games every week and producing match previews in Brazil and also the Copa Libertadores all the way up until the Copa America this summer. And I'm not sure where else you'd get like consistent South American betting content like that. So yeah, check out.
Yeah, we'll keep him busy during the summer as well for the Copa America. We didn't... Definitely. Really have time last week to discuss your bets. I mean, it's quite a long time ago now, but you had a good week on the 2 weeks ago for the Easter weekend. Was it 3 wins and a push?
It was, yeah. Honestly, I can't really remember what bets I took now. I think Sheffield Wednesday 0.0 Asian was the only one that didn't win, got a push there. And the other ones won. We had Lincoln City to win, they won 1-0, and Ipswich to win, they won 1-0. And also Ipswich, Southampton, both teams to score over 2.5 goals, and that was 2-2 in the end. So
comfortably got over the line, that one did, didn't it?
Yeah, we had a good week.
Winner in the first half.
Yeah, very good week.
Good stuff. So that takes your season profits. If we put a stake on every single bet, takes your season profits up to plus 3.935 units, which, decent return, considering you only really started in February.
Yeah, not bad. We'd like to, you know, keep getting that up as the season comes to a close. So, yeah, hopefully we can end 2023-24 on a bit of a high and maybe get towards that 10-unit line. That would be nice.
Fantastic. We'll have some more bets from Sam later in the show. But, I mean, we're recording on Wednesday morning here. I wasn't planning on discussing the Champions League action last night, but the games were so good. Can't resist it, really. They were really, really entertaining. So going to keep it brief on both City's game and Arsenal's game as well. So we'll start with City versus Madrid. Finished 3-3, some cracking goals. Unfortunately, I couldn't watch this match because of the ridiculous decision to not stagger the kickoff times. But Sam, did you catch any of the entertainment at the Bernabeu last night?
I did, yeah. I had a great night. I was flicking through Arsenal, City, Gillette Soccer Saturday. I had Plymouth QPR on as well. So yeah, interesting that I did catch a bit of Madrid. The standout for me was that it was 0.65 XG to Madrid versus 0.8 XG for City. And that's kind of a nod towards what we saw. Like most of the goals were absolute belters.
Unbelievable.
Started off with like a cheeky Bernardo Silva free kick from about 35 yards, maybe a little bit more. Guardiol, centre half, finishing like Kaká, edge of the box. And then Foden's effort, I think he scored the second goal, was unbelievable too. And I'm just praying that form continues into the summer. But for me, the pick of the bunch in terms of goals was Valverde's volley from the right of the box. If you've not seen it, go and watch it. Kind of arrowed into the bottom left corner. It's honestly gorgeous. And the return leg should be brilliant again. But you'd have to say, from a betting perspective anyway, that it's probably advantage Manchester City, and I suppose we'll see that in the prices. We don't, obviously, this is now Wednesday morning and the second round of games haven't played yet, so we don't have the prices to pick apart for the return legs, but it's got to be advantage City.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a similar story last season when the sides, when they came up, I think it was the semi-finals, they played each other last year, wasn't it? If I'm not mistaken, it was 1-1 at the Bernabeu in the first leg, and then City just took Madrid apart in the second leg, finished 4-0, I think it was, at the Etihad. So are you predicting something similar here?
Oh, it's really hard to say. I don't know. I don't think we're going to see a 4-0, but I think we're going to see goals again. I think we can be pretty sure that Real Madrid are going to have to go for it at some point. You'd expect City to score and go ahead in the game. So I think we're going to see goals. I don't know if we're going to get 4 for City, but hopefully it's as interesting as it was last night.
Yeah, definitely. I think they got the lineups wrong last year in Madrid. So maybe they've learned from that and it'll be a bit closer this time around. So on to Arsenal 2, Bayern Munich 2. Delicately poised. Any thoughts on that one, Sam?
Yeah, well, we mentioned a few weeks back when the draw came out and the odds came out, I said that I think Arsenal have to take something to Munich. Obviously, ended 2-2, so they're not going to take a lead to Munich. And I fear for Arsenal a little bit now, to be totally honest. I think the second leg is going to be a bit of a grim watch. If you're an Arsenal fan with like high blood pressure or something, then probably advised to avoid that one. I can see Bayern causing them all sorts of problems at home. And I know then they've not been the Bayern Munich we all know and have known for a number of years, especially domestically. But look, when they get into the Champions League, Thomas Tuchel as well, he's not done the best of jobs at Bayern, but he knows his way around the Champions League and so does this squad. And I just think away in Munich, this Arsenal team, they're not blessed with experience at this level in Europe. I fear for them, to be honest. And the prices aren't out yet, like I said, but I'd be edging for a pro buying angle, I think, when they do come out. I'm guessing you watched the full 90, Dan. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, I watched the game. It was strange. It was like a different team for Arsenal, a very different style of play. They just didn't look settled in the game compared to how they've been in the Premier League. Could have been nerves. A lot of the players haven't been at this stage before in the Champions League. Obviously, some have. You've got Kai Havertz in there. He's played and won in a Champions League final for Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea a few years ago. Jorginho's been there. But yeah, I think it was the wrong lineup. A few players, I think the stage got the better of them. Didn't think too much of Jakub Kivior's performance. And there were a few others out there, David Raya included, who didn't think covered themselves in glory on the night. But a few standouts, and I don't know, maybe the away leg might suit Arsenal a little bit more. I mean, how many, they've gone, what, 5 consecutive games of that conceding away from home in the Premier League. So they know how to get a result away from home, and maybe keeping things a little bit tighter might suit them. A couple of Bayern players went off with potential injuries as well. Alphonso Davies is going to be suspended as well for the second leg. So I wouldn't write Arsenal off at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely wouldn't write them off. And like you said, maybe away from home, being a little more compact is going to help. You saw last night when, from the little bits I saw when they were like pushing up onto Bayern Munich, Bayern left like the three, Kane, Gnabry, Sané, they left them up top, which is usually not really what Arsenal would be expecting. Usually they'd have 10 men behind the ball and their opponents would be looking to spring a counter. But with those three, or two or three up top, made it really difficult. And I think they were maybe caught in between, maybe fully committing and looking after those three. And we saw time and time again last night, Bayern counter-attacking, they're a real force. So if you give them those kind of opportunities in the second leg, yeah, it could be game over. So going to have to approach it a little bit differently, but you're definitely not out of it. And what did you think of the Saka penalty claim?
Honestly, I've flipped back and forth on this about 5 times. Like, I was adamant it was a penalty when I saw it in real time. Not
Yes, so was I.
Probably so was I. Because it was like the 95th minute and the last kick in the game, which would have made it 3-2. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those where if it's given on the pitch, VAR doesn't overrule it. And if it's not given on the pitch, VAR doesn't overrule it. It's very...
I thought it was a stonewall penalty. Yeah, like you said, in real time, I thought that's definitely a penalty. Definitely bringing it back. This will end 3-2. But it slowed down. The thing is, like, Saka doesn't need to put his leg there. He doesn't need to put his leg forward and hit the keeper. I think if he doesn't do that and he keeps it in a natural position, I think the keeper will clip him anyway.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. So, I think he's just running so fast and he just can't get his momentum moving, maybe.
I'm not sure. It looks like he flings it out a little bit.
He does. Oh, yeah. So, he's trying to get the penalty, but...
So I don't think it's a pen. But the thing is, like, the annoying thing is, yeah, like I said, like, he didn't really need to do that. So I think he could have got a pen anyway, but...
Yeah. Did you see the Gabriel penalty that Tuchel was complaining about after the game?
No.
Oh, unbelievable. So there was it was about 60th minute. I didn't even spot it during the match. Didn't pay any attention to it. I think David Raya was taking a goal kick. The ref blew his whistle and David Raya passed it along the side of his box to Gabriel, who picked the ball up and put it back down into the corner for him to take it.
Wow. Okay.
And there's a replay. Tuchel's losing his mind on the sidelines because the ball is technically live.
Yeah.
And yeah, by the letter of the law, should have been a penalty, but I didn't pick up on it at the time. No, nobody really picked up on it at the time. And the referee apparently saw it, but said to Tuchel that he couldn't...
Let him off.
He couldn't do it because it's a Champions League quarter final. You can't give a penalty for something like that.
Bloody hell.
But yeah, high entertainment in the Champions League last night.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I do want to move on to a new topic for this week, which is the main topic we're going to be discussing in the first half of the show, which is goals in the Premier League. It's something I've wanted to talk about for a while, but Sam, I was looking yesterday at the goal line, so like the Asian goal line over-under, which the bookmakers set. Basically, you can see how many goals the bookmakers are expecting in any given match, looking at which odds are closest to even money, either way for the over-under. And generally, looking back, going back 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 years, you'd see 10 fixtures in the Premier League each week. What, four or five of them would have goal lines set at around 2.5. A couple would be 2.75. Probably one or two that were above 3.25. But now, this week, for the fixtures on the 13th and 14th and 15th of April, you've got 10 games. One of them has a goal line of over 2.5, under 2.5. And that's Nottingham Forest versus Wolves. What do you think? What do you think? How do you approach that as a better?
I think the days of over 2.5 goals, especially this season, probably next, they are long gone. I think there was a period this season when we had a really big start to the season in terms of goals. There was still value to be had. There were still over 2.5 lines and you could still maybe etch out a bit of value at that goal line. But yeah, now they're absolutely long gone. And we started this podcast in the turn of the year. And I suppose it reflects in some of the goals, Premier League goals-based bets we've done here, because we don't go for any prices under 1.8. And I think every single Premier League goal line we've taken on this show, I think, has been at least over 2.75. And that's not because that's a goal line I particularly like. That's because it's the smallest goal line available in a match where I expect there to be three or more goals. So I suppose that just shows in itself kind of the way things are going. Yeah, in terms of maybe finding value in Premier League goal lines, I think we're now being pushed, unless you're happy to take over 3.5, over 4, which I'm not. Personal preference, my personal preference is to just stay clear of that. I don't want to be relying on, you know, getting 5 goals to get profit. I think we're being maybe pushed into a different market. So for example, what I've been taking a lot personally is the both teams to score an over 2.5 goals market. So you can get that a lot of the time around evens for three or more goals in a game. And if you're looking to get goals on side, maybe that's a way to go.
Yeah, and that's something that we're seeing a lot more of this season. So last season, 52.6% of matches in the Premier League had over 2.5 goals in it. 52.6%. That is up to 64.9% this year already. Same in BTTS, 51.6% last season, so just a little over half. And this campaign, that's gone up to 62.9%. So almost two-thirds of matches are having both teams scoring or over 2.5 or some combination of the two. Seven teams had an average of 3.0 goals per game in their Premier League matches last season. Seven teams. Do you know how many it is this year, Sam?
A lot more.
17.
Wow, okay.
So all but three teams are averaging 3.0 total match goals in their Premier League games this season.
It's crazy.
Crazy. So what's going on? I think one of the biggest increases that we've seen looking at the data is that we're seeing more teams going a goal behind and fighting back, especially visiting teams. So last year, the entirety of last season, 79 equalizing goals were scored by away teams. This season, that's already up to 104, and we've got seven match days left?
Yeah.
Seven match days left, and it's already at 104, so that figure's going to go up. Teams don't know where they're going, don't know when they're down, fighting back more. We've seen way more comebacks, both teams scoring in far more of the matches, which is pushing those lines up. Sam, any ideas why?
Well, in terms of this season specifically, it has to be added time, but like that's such a big thing. I've not really got any data to back up my theory. This is kind of on the top of my head, but I suppose like many people, I'm pretty convinced that over the last decade or two, Premier League defenses have got worse, or maybe they're focused on defending in the Premier League has waned slightly. Whilst Premier League attacks have improved, and like if you think back to like the 90s or 2000s, you think of like a flat back four, fullbacks like Dennis Irwin, Nigel Winterburn, Gary Neville, more defensive first type of fullbacks, more than, you know, the bombing wingbacks we see nowadays, and central defenders like of the ilk of like Jaap Stam, John Terry, Vidic, Tony Adams. They're few and far between now. Obviously, we have a few, Van Dijk, Saliba, etc. But it's rare you'll see a centre-back partnership on the level of Vidic, Ferdinand, Terry, Carvalho, Adams and Keown. Like, for example, that just, I can't think of many now. It has to be Arsenal, probably. Saliba and Gabriel, maybe that's the best centre-back pairing we've got. Not really, you know, that's not really the heights of what we were looking at in the 90s and 2000s. So, yeah, I just think with maybe looking at overarching reasons why goal averages are increasing, maybe season on season or decade on decade, I think it's because the overseas influence, tactical evolution of our game, with the exception of maybe someone like Jose Mourinho, like I think the influx of new ideas, new people, I think it was always going to lend itself to a higher scoring sport at the top level in England, where beforehand there was more of a focus on solid defensive units, moving in tandem as a four. I think that's very much changed. And then when you add stuff like added time into the mix, then yeah, we've obviously seen a big jump this season.
Yeah, I'll move on to added time in a little bit because I've done some research into that. But I agree with you. I agree with your point about defensive pairings, and I put goalkeepers into that category as well. Maybe not the primary attribute for a goalkeeper in the Premier League anymore is their ability to save shots.
It's very true. Yeah,
you look at Edison, who I mean, he's coming out of the team every now and then now, he's been injured. David Raya, the same. They aren't great shot stoppers, are they really? They're more there for their control of the ball and the desire for control and dominance in matches, especially on the ball, kind of trumps defensive attributes for goalkeepers and for centre-backs as well. I agree. You don't see many pure defenders anymore, especially at the top clubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. And if you'd have said that to like a football purist back in the 90s, that you'd rather your keeper was good with his feet than his hands, they'd be like, you know,
yeah,
very confused. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Okay. So my expectation was that it was largely down to the added time, the extra time that we're seeing. Because start of the season, there was that Premier League directive. We need more time with the ball in play. We need more added time. And we saw, especially at the start of the season, 8, 9, 10 minutes being added routinely to matches where we hadn't seen anything like that in the Premier League before. And the impacts and knock-on effects on betting were huge because pretty much every prop line was being surpassed, wasn't it? For throw-ins, for corners, for goal kicks, because games were just 10 minutes, 15 minutes longer at times, it felt like. So I looked into the data, and yes, that has been the case to date. So 10th of April, the average match length in the Premier League this season has been 101 minutes and 30 seconds, which is, well, I went back 12 seasons, it's the longest it's ever been by some distance. To put it into category, put it into kind of context, last season that was 98 minutes and 6 seconds. So, you know, decent jump up to 101. But I wasn't sure if that translated to ball in play time. Did, of course. So this season we've seen an average of 59 minutes of ball in play time. Now, that was just under 55 minutes last season. And generally, that was a bit of an outlier that season. The average figure is generally around 56 minutes. So comparing this season to the 10 Premier League campaigns that came before it, we are seeing an average increase of around 3 minutes ball in play time compared to the 10-year average, this campaign compared to the last 10 years. It makes a huge difference, but that's not the only reason why, because I kind of broke it down then to look at time of kind of ball in play time compared to how many goals are scored and breaking down how many seconds of in play time you'd see for a goal. So that is also increasing as well. So going back last 10 years or so, we're seeing a goal every 2000 seconds, a little over 2000, maybe 2100 seconds on average. This year, that's gone down to 1,800 seconds. So there has been an increase as well. It's not just about the extra time on the extra match time. It's also down to chances being scored more frequently or more chances being created.
And I'll tell you what, we'll have a massive difference, which we've not really mentioned, is VAR too. Like the introduction of that, the introduction of so many penalties, handballs in the box, like little niggly fouls inside the box and stuff, like it's all going to add up, especially when you add it to a sport that didn't have anything of the sort beforehand. So yeah, when you've got, you know, VAR added time thrown in the mix, as well as plenty of teams that can really pack a punch all the way from, you know, top of the league all the way down to like 16th, 17th. You could see Forest, for example, go into Chelsea, probably a bad example, you know, not too good are they. See Forest go into, like a Liverpool and getting a result or at least finding in that. So, yeah, it's been an exciting season.
It certainly has. Before we get on to Sam's bets this week, let's head down to the National Leagues. And Sam, we discussed Torquay in detail a few weeks ago, but you've spotted something interesting for one of their rivals, which could be worth looking into.
Yeah, so we're recording on the 10th of April here, and Truro City have played 4 matches in April already. So 4 games in 10 days. They played tonight, Wednesday night, and they play tomorrow, Thursday night, before about 40 hours worth of break until Saturday afternoon. And this is all thanks to unprecedented rainfall in the southwest leading to postponement. So Truro City aren't the only team down that way, far from it, especially the lower down the divisions you go. And yeah, it's crazy. So Truro finished the season on the 20th of April. From the 1st of the month to the 20th, they have 10 scheduled matches to play. So I don't care who you are, what the makeup of your squad is, unless you're Manchester City and you've got like 12 rotating 8-foot central defenders, you're going to struggle, like clearly. And if you get their schedule up, you might have noticed that 8 of their 10 matches in April are home games. So, you know, that's ideal, a little bit of respite. However, Truro actually onto their third home ground share of the season. So they started the season ground sharing with Plymouth Parkway, which is an hour and 20 minutes away, nearly 60 miles away from Truro. And then they went on to Taunton, which is a 120 mile poke, probably double the time it took to get there. It took to get to Plymouth Parkway, sorry. And now Truro's home games are being played in Gloucester, who are a National League North team. And that's 200 miles away, or 3 hours and 20 minutes on a good day without traffic. Gloucester City play on a synthetic turf, so I'd imagine the powers that be at Truro decided that this was the only way to guarantee they'd be able to fulfil their fixtures this season. And from a betting point of view, there are no fixtures currently on Bet365 for the weekend, so I've nothing to really tip or suggest, but I would just say keep an eye out, not only for Truro's games. They're not the only team in the Southwest, like I said. I think of Plymouth Parkway off the top of my head too. They're in a similar boat. And with this kind of fixture congestion predicament, just have a look and see if you can oppose them in any way. I'm not saying they're going to lose every game, but in terms of conceding goals, corners, etc., these thin squads and tired legs, that they're going to catch up to them in the end. And you can't play Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday at these kind of levels and expect to come out unscathed in terms of results and injuries, I suppose. So yeah, just keep an eye out for that. There's plenty of that, especially down in the Southwest.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sunday league stuff, isn't it, where games don't get played sometimes between the months of November and February, usually. But you don't see it at this level, really, certainly not when there's
betting odds not available. Like, let's not get into it, but it's global warming, isn't it? So, you know, we're probably going to see this more. That's another pod. But the thing is, like, the people that run the league, they don't want to see their players and teams go through 10 games in 20 days. The clubs don't want to see it. The players don't want to do it. But Truro aren't going to want to give up all their points and face relegation. And the games have to be played by a certain time. So what can you do? Like, this is the only kind of way to go about it, which is terrible. But from a betting point of view, it's probably going to open up some opportunities. So definitely keep an eye out.
Yeah, definitely. And for the record, it's they've only played 4 games so far in April. If we recorded this 48 hours later, they would have played 6. But of the 4 so far, they haven't won any. So it's 2 defeats, 2 draws for Truro, who were they were doing all right, weren't they, before this run? I kind of stuck in middle
of the road.
Yeah, they're pretty solid. But yeah, definitely one to look out for in the next couple of weeks as they continue to play up in Gloucester. Let's move on now and look at Sam's picks for the week. And first off, Sam, we're heading to League 2 for an under-selection involving one of the league's top scorers this season in Crewe. What have you gone for and why?
Yeah, you've really sold that in the opening gambit. But so Crewe scored a lot of goals. There were periods of this League Two season where they were alongside your Wrexhams, your Mansfields, where they were one of the league's entertainers. But now I think we could get 10 Crewe fans on the pod and 9 of them would tell you they're not confident whatsoever of scoring here against Grimsby. And it's probably the same story for Grimsby fans too. Like, neither have been awash with goals in recent weeks, home or away. If you look at Crewe's season averages and goals scored at home, for example, the data suggests that this is a really handy outfit with plenty up their sleeve, and it's probably why we're getting these prices. Crewe have scored 68 goals from 43 games, and that has got them at a 1.58 goals scored per 90 average throughout the League Two season. Pretty good. And that's not even taking into account, you know, goals scored against. In recent weeks, that has come to a bit of a grinding halt. Injuries haven't helped in the slightest. Key players missing have stunted their output in the final third, and wobbling in terms of results at this stage of the season, it's really rocked confidence levels on the pitch and in the stands too. And all of this put together has whipped up a bit of a concoction that's not so easy on the eye, and in turn, it's produced a lack of goals. Now, when you've gone through 35 games or so scoring freely, and then when you get to the business age and you start to watch this on the pitch, you know, it definitely starts to have an effect mentally too. So no longer are they one of the league league's entertainers under Lee Bell. Crewe have scored 4 goals in their last 8 games. They picked up a 1-0 win in Morecambe last night, Tuesday night, which is massive for their playoff hopes. But what I liked most about that performance was that they looked much more defensively robust than they have been, which is perfect for this selection. So I had this kind of prepared before Tuesday's matches, and usually what happens is I'll have like an unders pick, and then both teams will play out like a 4-3 spectacle. But I'm both of them ended 1-0, which I thought they might do. So yeah, this bet definitely still stands. And if Crewe bring that kind of solidity into the Grimsby at home fixture on the weekend, I think there's every chance we see a low scoring affair. Grimsby themselves have witnessed over 2.5 goals in just 2 out of 10 of their recent matches. 2 3-1 back-to-back losses in March against Barrow and Wrexham, which is no disgrace because they're both right up there. They were the only over 2.5 outings that scuppered their recent under trends. So if you're looking at the table, if you're looking at this game's importance, Grimsby are 5 points and 2 places off Colchester in the final relegation spot, with Sutton the team in between. Colchester have a game in hand on Grimsby too, so Grimsby are desperate for points. I think they'll be okay in the end, but they need points. So they're going to turn up to Crewe. They're going to be hard to beat first and foremost. And this Crewe side, who are struggling to get over the line in terms of clinching playoffs, they're crawling over the line. I think it'll be a case of not losing first and foremost. I think they're going to get playoffs, but I don't think either team are going to turn out and just be like, turn up, sorry, and put in a performance which sees like an end-to-end spectacle. I just can't see it. So I think this is a game that will go under 2.5 goals. And I did have this priced at evens, but I think that's gone overnight. But I think on the Asian line, we're getting 1.98. So that is something that I would take.
Let's have a look. I was getting 1.95. But I do want to talk about the sort of average match goals for the two teams. So Crewe's games in League 2 this season have averaged 2.93. Grimsby's have averaged 2.90. And you mentioned the recent trends in the last 8 games. So in the last 8 matches, Crewe's average total match goals figures have gone down to 1.63. From 2.93 to down to 1.63. And Grimsby's have dropped 2.13. So both well below the 2.5 line. But are you worried that that will sort of even out here and it's just a blip in the season and we'll see a return to the overall kind of trend for the rest of the campaign?
Yeah, look, Dan, I'm always worried, especially when taking an unders play. But I just think, I think these prices, we're getting near evens for unders. I just think that kind of pricing structure is going off the season as a whole. It's not looking at where both teams are right now. It's not looking at their previous 10 games, for example. It's just looking at the fact that Crewe are at home, score a lot of goals, concede goals too. And that's just not the case. Like I said, both are really crawling over the line in terms of their own individual objectives. And I just see that continuing here. So I think maybe the price should be a little lower. I would have expected this line to be under 2.25 goals. So to be getting under 2.5, yeah, I'm more than happy with it. It's not, I don't like unders. I know many people won't, but in terms of prices, it was one that really stood out.
Yeah, unfortunately, Sam, it has gone down. It's 1.95 everywhere now. So that's the
figure
I'll be taking.
That's fine. I suppose that's a good sign. So
okay. Move it. That's under 2.5 goals in Crewe versus Grimsby in League 2. And moving on to Sam's second pick for the week was staying in League 2. And this match has implications at both ends of the table, with Forest Green Rovers statistically the worst team in the EFL against a Wrexham side that's seeking back-to-back promotions.
Yes, worst team in the English Football League. So obviously I'm backing against them. But a braver person than me would probably look at this bet that I've gone for, which is over 1.5 Wrexham goals and under 1.5 Forest Green goals in a bet builder. That comes out at 1.83. Someone a little braver than me would look at that, probably chuckle and get his money on Wrexham Winterhill at 2.37, which is where I started off. But carrying along that line of thinking and making things a little bit more conservative for the pod, yeah, opting for that bet builder, just it gives me just a little bit more reassurance. So this is a Forest Green side that look like they're going to get relegated, but realistically, they are like fighting for their lives. So when you've got a team with their backs to the wall like that, no matter how bad they are, they can spring a surprise, they can spring a result, and you know, they can certainly spring at least one goal. So at least this way, with this bet builder, we're getting a little bit of reassurance that Forest Green can still score and we'd be paid out on the bet. So I think Wrexham need maybe two more wins to clinch back-to-back promotions. I think that there's a permutation where Wrexham can get promoted on the weekend, but they need MK Dons and Barrow results to fall favourably too. But whatever way you look at this fixture on Saturday against the worst club in the EFL, it's massive for Wrexham. They're so close after being fantastic for pretty much the entire campaign, especially at home in Wales. If you have a look, in 17 out of 21 home games, Wrexham have scored two or more goals, which is obviously the first part of the bet builder. That's an 81% strike rate for their part of this builder. And they've just, last night, they've just battered an in-form playoff hunting Crawley side on Tuesday night to the tune of 4-1. Paul Mullin has 11 goals in his last 10 matches. He added the second and fourth against Crawley. He's 2.05 on Bet365 to find the net anytime against Forest Green, which is probably going to happen as well.
Yeah. So what about Forest Green Rovers then? Are you concerned that they could make life difficult for Wrexham and threaten that under selection? They are capable of scoring goals, Forest Green. Away from home, they've scored an average of 1.1 goals per game in their away matches in League Two this season. Whereas, well, Wrexham have conceded more goals at home than anyone else in the top six.
Yeah, exactly. And Forest Green went away to Crewe maybe 2 weeks ago and beat them 3-0. I remember that because I was on Crewe to get out of their slump and score a few goals, which they did not. I am slightly concerned, and we've seen, especially at home, these Wrexham matches can produce some fairly big scorelines. So it's a little concerning, but that's the reason why we've gone for the under 1.5 goals instead of the win to nil. If you look at Forest Green Rovers specifically, they stuttered to another limp loss against a much better team in Mansfield on Tuesday. They have, Forest Green, they've recorded zero shots on target in 3 out of 5 recent matches. And it looked like they'd make that 4 out of 5, but they managed 2 late shots on target against Mansfield last night. They also won 3-0 against Crewe, like I said, and that's the one real outlier. And if they do a job on Wrexham like they did at Crewe, then I think I'm just going to give up. But they are fighting for their lives in League Two. It's a very different story to Wrexham's trajectory. And because of that, I wouldn't be overly surprised if they managed to get a go. But I just look at Forest Green, and especially against the better teams this season, they've been nowhere near good enough. And in the last 2 and a bit weeks, they've unluckily played 3 of the top 4, Stockport, Mansfield and MK Dons, losing all 3-0. And 2 of those, MK Dons and Stockport, not having a shot on target. And yeah, if you look at maybe the games they've played, I'll just get them up here, the games they've played against the League Two's top four, we get an aggregate scoreline of 15-1. So that goal actually came against Wrexham, 1-1 draw in February. So hopefully history doesn't repeat itself, and hopefully for the sake of this bet, we see Wrexham put another 3 points forward in their big bid for League One football. But yeah, we've got the worst team in League Two, who struggle against the big boys, against a Wrexham side at home where they can score goals with a bit between their teeth, with the best striker in the league on form. I just think the home side, they're going to score goals, and Wrexham and Forest Green, sorry, they're going to really struggle to get hold of the ball, let alone score 2 goals. So at 1.83, it came out as a pretty favourable bet builder, and one I'm definitely keen on taking for the weekend.
Good stuff. That's over 1.5 goals for Wrexham and under 1.5 goals for Forest Green Rovers. Let's hope that price doesn't move too much before kickoff. Sam, I'm going to ask you what I've asked you so many times on this podcast, but what are you saying, singles or doubles?
I'm going to go for singles, but I don't know if you remember a couple of weeks ago, I said I'd be taking a four-unit fourfold on the bets for the Easter holiday. Right. So I'm hoping you jotted that down, because I did say it.
I did not jot it down. I'll have to go back and listen to the show to see if you actually said that.
To be fair, I did say it, but I took it back straight away and just went for singles. So yeah, we'll go singles again.
Go singles.
Hopefully they can both get home and make up a double. That'll be nice.
Very nice. So yeah, one unit for each then, Sam. So just to recap, we've got under 2.5 goals in Crewe versus Grimsby in League 2, and sticking in England's fourth division, we've got a bet builder over 1.5 goals for Wrexham and under 1.5 goals for Forest Green Rovers in their match. Let's leave it there. As ever, if you are going to be using some of the tips from the show, then please gamble responsibly, only betting what you can afford to lose. If you have any spare time, please leave us a review on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, because we are a brand new show and it helps us so much with visibility. Let's wrap it up there. Thanks as ever to Sam Ingram.
Thank you very much.
And thanks from me. We'll be back next week.